Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take for human beings to transcend the boundaries of nationality, faith, and culture? When the U.S. invaded Iraq in 2003, Rafrokh Barak was a 22-year-old English literature student at Baghdad University. As a child, she had been raised on scary tales of a bad guy named Mr. John, who lurked in dark corners waiting for victims. But rather than a mythological boogeyman like the one that gives kids nightmares in this country, Mr. John was shorthand. It was a shorthand term for Americans. So it took extraordinary courage for her to take a translating job serving NBC News correspondents in Baghdad. But with the early days of the war ravaging the Iraqi economy, Rafrokh was for a time the sole source of support for her parents and nine siblings. Don Teague is a Dallas-based correspondent for CBS News who met Rafrokh while he was employed with NBC. They share the remarkable story of their working relationship and extraordinary friendship in their new book, Saved by Her Enemy, an Iraqi woman's journey from the heart of war to the heartland of America. Don, Rafrokh, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much. We're glad to be here.
Rafrokh, talk about what you had been led to believe about Americans after you were old enough not to believe in the boogeyman exactly. But what did you think it was like within American culture?
Well, I grew up in, you know, during the Iran-Iraq war first, and then when the Gulf War happened, I was only 10 years old, and we were all, like, sitting inside the house watching from the window the war happening outside. And, of course, we had all kind of questions asking our parents what was happening. But since we don't talk about the government and nobody talks about the government or mentions them. So my parents were like, okay, listen, you know, these are just bad people attacking us for no reason whatsoever. You know, they just want this, they want that. And so we learned to get scared from them. You know, whoever is outside is killing our people. So they must be really bad. And if your parents and the government say they are bad, then they must be bad. So we're expecting, you know, when the 2003 war happened, that, oh gosh, the Americans are coming back to finish what they started in the Gulf War, and they're going to kill us all. So,
well, and it's interesting, and it's not surprising that your concept of what the U.S. government must be like was shaped by the concept of the government that you saw at home.
Because, well, our government was one-way government. You have to listen to them all the time. You can't argue with them, and what, you know, you can't mention them in any sort of comment, joke, whatever it is, because you will get sent to prison if you talk badly about the government. So we didn't have that, like, free voice to talk about anything governmental or political. So our idea of all of the governments in the world, including the American government, that you can't, you know, if you say something about the government that is bad, you're going to end up in jail. So,
Don, you had an early conversation with Rafrokh, and you were trying to explain to her that for all the flaws we have in this country, we do have free speech.
Right.
And she literally not only did not, but could not bring herself to believe you.
No, she couldn't. We had a conversation there in Baghdad. This was in, to give the listeners a time frame, 2004 in February, just about the one-year anniversary of the war. And I was telling her, look, I know this is so bad here. I know all of this death is horrible around you, but you've got to admit it, at some level it's better without Saddam here because he was killing so many of his own people. And she said, well, those people, they broke the rules. They brought it on themselves by talking about the government, which was shocking enough for an American to hear.
Yeah.
And she said, but that's the same as in your country. If George Bush hears people say bad things about him, he rounds them up and kills them or throws them in prison. And I said, no, actually, we can, you know, half of the country dislikes him. People have, you know, parades in the street about how much they don't like him. And she really didn't believe me. She thought I was lying for some reason. And it really took, it was an evolution for her to sort of understand that in this country and in the free world, if you will, you can say pretty much what you want about the government and have your own views.
Your father was put in prison for about a year, even though he was never given a trial and, in fact, never officially charged. Were you ever able to understand why he was arrested?
Well, he was a witness in something that happened. And when he was taken, they told us that he's only going to be there for a few days. They are trying to clear the case. It ended up to be a few months. And then finally, they, you know, once they cleared the case, they cleared him as a witness so he can leave. But it sort of like the government decided that, you know, once you are involved in a case there, whether you are a witness, a criminal, or whatever it is, you don't see a judge because there's no case against you. But at the same time, your name came up as a material witness, so you stay there until they call you. And that's
you just stay in jail.
So that's basically what happened. And we didn't understand. I was only 16 at the time. I was only 16. I was in 1996, so...
So you went through high school thinking you were going to study to be a doctor or a lawyer. How did you end up as an English literature major?
The government. Yeah, I love being a lawyer right now, but I couldn't. No, the government there like chooses for you what you study by the end of your high school, because there's an average at high school that they will put in a computer system, and you just put the colleges that you want in there. But it ends up with the computer deciding which one of these you will go to. And I didn't get chosen for the law school or whatever. I went to art school and English department. So,
Don, you have kind of an atypical background for a journalist. You spent 11 years in the U.S. Army Reserves and the National Guard.
Right.
How did that prepare you, if it did, for what you experienced once you were working for the network and then sent to Iraq?
I think it's part of the reason NBC initially hired me. They hired me shortly after September 11th, and I had the sense, although they never came out and said this, that they sort of looked around to their staff and realized that most of the people, at least the correspondents, didn't really have a good understanding for what the military was all about.
Even it sounds funny, but the acronyms alone can be terrifying for people with no experience.
Right. So, I always felt that was one of the reasons they hired me. And then that meant that they were probably going to send me to war. And everyone knew, shortly after 2001, first Afghanistan began, and already the saber rattling was beginning for Iraq. So we sort of knew that was coming. I would say my personal experience is that, as I write about in the book, I don't consider myself a war correspondent by any means. I was a correspondent who was willing to go to this war for some time. And I found that being there, I think having been in the military, I was probably more worried about getting killed than my colleagues were, because I wasn't sure that they quite understood how dangerous what we were doing was.
They have that sense of invincibility, like, I've got this camera with me, so nothing
right.
can happen.
And I'm surrounded by these troops, so nothing can happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I always envisioned in my life that if I went to war, it was going to be as a soldier. Specifically, I was a helicopter pilot, so it was going to be, 500 feet over the battlefield, or, sneaking around trees or whatever at low level. So it was not a comfortable feeling for me, actually, as an unarmed civilian journalist not embedded with a unit. So I didn't have the protection of the military. My time there was always drive around in a Dodge Durango and hope nothing bad happens. And I wasn't a big fan of that.
So, Raf Raf, you developed exceptionally good English skills, but I'm guessing that from what I've read, translating for American journalists would not have been your dream job.
No, I didn't think of it as, but at the same time, when the war happened, everybody lost their jobs, and I had to find something to support my family. And when I knew that they were looking for translators and people who speak English, I put it to work, and I went there. And I remember a conversation with my mom about it, and she said, "Well, what are you doing that?" And I said, "I'm just going to be careful." And she said, "Just stay on the cautious side. You don't know these people. Don't say anything. Just do your job, and that's it, and come home." And so that's what I did on daily basis when I first started, until I got to know them, and it became more personal. Like, these people are really nice to me, so why am I not really putting it, more effort into this? And so I started, doing not just the job, but it became a friendship that I developed there with them.
It was interesting. It was sort of a suspension of the rules, the cultural rules, by her family to allow her to work with us, not just as strangers, but literally working with men that she's not related to, because in her particular sect, if you will, of Iraq, and then her neighborhood and culture.
You were raised Muslim. Excuse me for interrupting.
Yes. No. Very, very strict rules about things like that. So, there's punishment to be had for simply having a conversation with a member of the opposite sex if you're not related. But, the sort of reality of doing this job and supporting the family suspended that while she's at work, so she could come work with us. And then as soon as she left us, she was sort of back under the rules of that culture.
What does it take for a translator and a journalist to develop the kind of almost reading each other's thoughts relationship that's required to get the work done, especially in these high-pressure situations?
Well, for Don, it didn't take much. No, I'm just kidding. But, like, to me, it was more of, like, a trust issue. When we went out in the field and we were doing a story, it was more of, I know that they don't understand this culture, and not far from the culture, the language. So it's two things that they need to be understanding. And if I could be that bridge, then I'll try my best. But sometimes if I see the dangerous situation, then I'm not going to pull them into it. And I'll try to, like, just do my job and protect them at the same time. And that kind of build up a trust in between you and that correspondent or producer or whoever you're working with, even if it's cameraman, you know, who are not really speaking on air, but they will still trust you to be that wall that protects them from everyone else that's outside in the world that they are not understanding. And that's where the relationship starts, because if you don't trust them, you can't work with them.
And from my end, it was quite easy to trust Raf Raf. First of all, you know, from speaking to her, she's an intelligent and driven young woman, and you really you can get that from her immediately when you meet her. But at the same time, you know, she was working for NBC and had been for several months before I went there and met her. So Richard Engel, the NBC correspondent who's been in the Middle East since all of this began, he trusted her. And if he trusts her, well, then I'm going to trust her.
Don Teague and Raf Raf Barak are my guests this hour. They are the authors of the book Saved by Her Enemy, An Iraqi Woman's Journey from the Heart of War to the Heartland of America. We'll resume our conversation in a moment and invite you to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. Jeff Whittington is with us now, and we are asking you to please make a contribution to KERA at 1-888-694-6931. If you believe in the values of public radio and the ability to have a great conversation with people who are of very diverse backgrounds at the top of their games professionally, your financial support makes it possible. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Chris, and hello to you. Thanks so much for tuning in today. You know, I'm really excited because, Chris, the number on the monitor right now says we've raised about $385,000, which I think is about $50,000 more than we had accomplished at this time yesterday, which is really heartening. We need to make those kinds of strides in order to finish this drive sooner than later. You know, and we'd really like to get back to the regular schedule and be able to do just the regular program schedule without the pledge interruptions. You know what? We're not going to do another drive until September. So your contribution right now will help us speed us along to ending this thing, and we'll get right back to the regular schedule. We won't be back till September. And Chris, you're right. We do have copies of Saved by Her Enemy available when you join the station at the $120 membership level. Of course, we're not selling you the book at that level.
Retail price, $24.99.
Exactly. We encourage you to go out and get it at your favorite online retailer or brick-and-mortar retailer. But please do support your public radio station at 888-694-6931.
You can also go online to kera.org and make a contribution there. The great thing is you can do this with a debit or credit card. We love that because we get the money right away. If you want to set up a sustaining membership, that's terrific too. That allows you to spread out your contributions so that we take a certain amount per month as opposed to taking it all at once a year. So give us a call now, 1-888-694-6931, or go online to kera.org. And Jeff, if people are interested in Saved by Her Enemy, they can have a copy of that. But all of our other thank you gifts pretty much are still available.
Yeah, and I'm sure you can even get copies of the book at the signing this evening.
There's a signing event taking place this evening, and that is happening at the Corporate Guild of Dress for Success Dallas, hosting a reception from 5 to 7 tonight at the Hotel Palomar in Dallas. Very nice.
I want to thank Jay Smith in Denton, Charles Arnold in Dallas, Casey Montgomery in Dallas. Please be the next one to call 1-888-694-6931 or contribute online at kera.org. Only with your financial support can this station, KERA, your public radio station, continue to bring you the programming that you appreciate and depend on. Please be the next one to call. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can distinguish yourself professionally and personally. Evening classes are available in Plano and Dallas. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are former NBC News translator in Iraq, Rafraf Barak, and Don Teague, who is a correspondent today for CBS News, who used to work for NBC News. Their book, written together, is called Saved by Her Enemy, An Iraqi Woman's Journey from the Heart of War to the Heartland of America. Join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org. So before the break, we talked about, you know, what it takes to bond. And you two actually survived a bombing together.
Yeah, that was really the bonding moment, at least from my point of view. We had been working together for, I guess, 2 or maybe 3 weeks at the time. And I'd already figured out that she was the translator that I wanted to work with because she's smart. She was a go-getter. And I always knew I was going to get what I needed. But I also liked her. I wouldn't say we were friends at the time, but we were, you know, professionally friends at least. And we knew at the same time that insurgents had begun. Well, let me back up a little bit. There's never been a more dangerous place for journalists to work in general, right, than Iraq. Even more dangerous than the job for journalists is the interpreters and translators who work with the military, the media, American companies. It doesn't matter. They are hunted down and killed.
Specifically targeted by insurgents.
Specifically
for helping Americans.
Targeted, right. They consider them collaborators with the enemy. So we knew at that point that they were aware that Rafraf was working with this company and that there were people who were not happy about that. I think it was just becoming, we were just becoming aware that she would soon, within weeks, be specifically targeted, and they were actively hunting her at that point. And they, in fact, later, which we describe in the book, she was kidnapped, yeah, which we can get to later. But so all of this is beginning to happen at the same day we go to a school to cover a story. And we had been invited to the school by the military. The U.S. had bombed the school during the war and had rebuilt it and was giving it back to the community. It was supposed to be a really positive story. And it was. We spent a couple hours there. We were interviewing kids and school teachers, and everyone was happy to see us. But that's not the kind of thing the insurgency can allow to get out there. And they knew this event was happening. They knew the military and the media would be there. We were the only media. And so they had planted two bombs right there in the midst of where we all were. And at whatever point, they decided to set off the first one. And Rafraf and I were standing, hard to tell because I never measured it, but I would say 100 to 150 feet from this thing when it went off. The military told us it could easily have killed everyone within that distance. It didn't. And the reason it didn't was because the person who planted the bomb dug the hole too deep. So all of the shrapnel went straight up in the air and sort of rained down around us instead of shooting through our bodies. But as we got back to the vehicles and we raced away from the scene, and the second bomb that was designed to kill us as we did that malfunctioned, they found it later, I really became aware of this. First of all, you know, I'm thanking God that I get to go home to see my family and I don't have to do this every day. And then here's this young woman sitting next to me who, this is home. This is her life. And for the foreseeable future, people will try to kill her on a daily basis. And I just had this overwhelming feeling that she wasn't going to survive it. And that's really what led to the effort to bring her out of Iraq into the U.S. It was that moment.
Rafraf, you used to leave for work every morning and tell your mom, look, if I don't come home tonight, try not to be sad. I can't imagine having to say that to your mother every day.
Well, because you got to a point where, like, you know that this is how life is. You know, I've watched a lot of people that I had worked with or even people that I just knew from before the war or after the war, young girls or guys that were translators who either got killed, got threatened, and just, you know, left their jobs or whatever. But I wasn't going to give up. But at the same time, it was a decision that I was making, that this is a risk that I'm taking, but I'm taking it because for once in my life, I am thinking on my own. I am an independent woman, even though I'm still living with my family, but I can make my own decisions, and started to fall on me to whether continue on that path or not. And my mom, yes, she was upset. My family was upset that I was continuing with that, even with the threats that I got, but I wanted to continue it. So
your mission, it sounds like, started to shift from simply, I need the money to support my family and I'll grin and bear it, to feeling like there was a purpose to what you were doing.
Yeah, there was a purpose. The purpose was that I saw a change that I was doing, even though it was little tiny bitty change, you know, it was still a change. I watched where I went to do a story and the people couldn't get their, you know, word out because they couldn't speak the language. And for me to translate to that foreigner and tell them, hey, listen, look at these people. They're not just trying to kill you, but they are just trying to live their life. And that kind of the way you are trying to convey a culture to a foreigner, that is sort of what I wanted to do. But at the same time, I couldn't just do it by myself.
Did you also feel like you wanted, there came a point where you started to want to really understand U.S. culture and what that meant and how it was different from what you had expected. Did you also feel like you wanted to sort of educate Don and the other media folks and military folks that you dealt with about what the Iraqi people who are not sort of in charge of things are really like?
Yeah. A lot of, we had so many of these conversations, whether it was with Don or Kerry Sanders. He was one of the correspondents that I was very close to, mm-hmm. you know. We talked a lot all the time. Or other people, Kevin Seitz or, you know, Richard Engel. Like, I mean, Richard Engel even spoke the language. So me and him had to, like, have all sort of conversations about, hey, do you think if I say that in Arabic, would it be respectful or not? And all that, these little tiny, you know, details, it does matter to the people because it's the way that you carry yourself and you talk to the people. And it's sort of that kind of relationship that you built with the correspondent or the producer, that when you talk to them and you translate to them, you're not just translating a word, but you're telling them, oh, and with this word, it comes this and this and that. And the way you say it, the tone you say it in.
The nuance of everything.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. it's more than just translation. It's just a cultural bridging.
Translation.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that while she's trying to bridge these two cultures, she was also trying to find a bridge to a new life for herself, because what she was discovering was that, and this, we write about this in the book, that she always felt that she was a second-class citizen in Iraq, particularly as a woman, but also as a Shiite, not the favored religious sect. And when she was in that little island that was NBC, she considered that America, and her relationships with people changed entirely there. She was considered equal. People valued what she said in a way that she didn't feel they valued what she said in the rest of the country, that she was sort of put back in her place when she left that little island of America. So I sort of really felt that even then, that she was sort of longing for something bigger for herself, if you will.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We're speaking this hour with Don Teague and Raf Raf Barak. Their new book is called Saved by Her Enemy. Let's go and speak with Thomas in Dallas. Hello, Thomas.
Hi. Yeah, I really find it grossly callous to suggest that the displacement of 4 million people, the death of 1 million people, is justified by displacing Saddam. We have a new dictator there, Maliki, who's raping people in torture cells. He's the same kind of strong man we just had. You know, the lady may have benefited because her sect is getting a little better representation, but it's just pretty ugly for an American to say, hey, you know, we got a new strong man for you. There you go. You know, for these people to work with us, it's treason for them. And, you know, we saw a lot of discord and unleashed the dogs of war there. And I don't see how it's justified by just installing a new strongman.
Well, let's get a comment for you. What do you guys think?
Well, I can say that, you know, when she and I had that conversation, this is 2004, and I'm just trying at that point to, I don't know, look for something positive there. You know, I think it was natural for a lot of Americans to say, well, we hope this leads to something better. And I was telling her, because I see this person who is suffering from this war every day and her family's suffering, and I'm trying to give her some hope, you know. So, and I should say that readers who read the book won't find this. It's not really a political book. I really take great pains to not try to go into politics, but just sort of lay out the situation on both sides as well as possible. But I certainly understand his views.
And I'm sorry. And as far as Maliki goes, I mean, the new election, you know, got Ayad Alawi now back in, and it's a new set of, you know, ways and thinking, and it's a different sector than what Maliki was. So we're hoping that that would change. And yes, I do agree with you, but at the same time, it's like you need to, like, just be patient, because it's a war. And you know that there will be people that keep coming over and over looking for just a position to make, you know, a name for themselves instead of trying to make the country better. But hopefully with this new election, it will be better.
Talk about the first conversation that you two had with one another about the possibility of Rafraf leaving Iraq and coming to the United States, because this is not an easy thing to get done diplomatically.
No, it was impossible, actually. And the conversation happened after the first difficult conversation, which was to call my wife. This sort of comes out of left field for her when I call her from Baghdad and say, well, there's this young woman here.
Beautiful 22-year-old young woman.
who needs help. Yeah. And if we can help her, would you be okay with that? And when I explained the situation, she said, well, absolutely, if we can help her. She'll now tell you that the reason she said yes was because she didn't believe we'd actually be successful getting her out, but she'll be joking. So then it was a matter of first speaking to my colleagues there and seeing if they had the same sort of high opinion of Rafraf and the same fears that I had. And they pretty much all of them did, that she was at great risk there in Iraq, because we knew, in fact, that she had shown up on a list. She'd been warned by several people that they were looking for her and planning to kill her. So at that point, it's not about politics or anything else. It's just about, here's somebody who has been trying to help us, and now she needs help. And if we can do it, let's do it. So when I sort of first floated the idea to her, I think that her reaction was, sure, because I don't think she believed it was possible.
No.
Either.
No, I didn't think it was possible, because, you know, you hear about these things all the time, especially after the war. There's a lot of people that came out and said, well, we're going to go to this country, or we're going to go to Syria, or we're going to go to Jordan, you know. But at the end of the day, you know that these things are not easy to do or make happen. So, you know, you don't put much hope in it. And when it finally did happen, when he talked to me about it, I went in and discussed it with my mom, and I said, listen, you know, there's a chance. And she said, I remember we're sitting in the kitchen, and she's like looking at me going, if this was a regular, you know, circumstances that was going on right now, I would never let you go, because I wouldn't let you go in a culture that you don't know about. But I don't want you to come back to me in a body bag, so I'm letting you go this time. Mm-hmm. So just be careful.
Rafraf Barak and Dawn Teague are my guests. Their new book is called Saved by Her Enemy, an Iraqi woman's journey from the heart of war to the heartland of America. We'll resume the conversation in a moment. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org. You can join KERA with a pledge of financial support. Keep public radio strong in this community by calling 1-888-694-6931 or going to kera.org and clicking, I'm sure the support button is quite prominent on the homepage now, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can do it really easily if you choose not to take a thank you gift, which about half of the folks who support the station do. It only takes about 90 seconds to become a new member or renew your membership. I'd like to remind everybody who maybe has joined at one of the higher levels in years past, if you have been considering renewing your membership, if you've appreciated the service that you've received in exchange for your donation, when you turn on KERA every day and hear the great programming that you only find on public radio in North Texas, please consider renewing your membership today at 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. We could really use your contribution, your renewal contribution at whatever level, but especially at those higher levels, because we'd like to wrap this drive up as soon as possible.
1-888-694-6931 is the number. We do have at the $120 level copies of Saved by Her Enemy if you would like that as your thank you gift. You know, Jeff, one of the great luxuries that we have here in public radio and specifically on the Think Show is the ability to sit down for an hour with Dawn and Rafraf and have this conversation. We could sit for 6 hours and not run out of things to talk about, but it's really nice to not have to sort of compact it into a 5-minute or an 8-minute or a 10-minute interview, which would be a lot in a lot of other places.
Or 30 seconds.
Or 30 seconds.
You know, three questions in 30 seconds. Thanks for joining us. Next, please. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just not what we do, and it's a real pleasure and honor to be able to have guests of this caliber in the studio and to be able to talk about their work and their lives and their experiences and really get into the conversation. And you only really find that kind of depth when you tune into public radio. I do want to remind everybody that the Corporate Guild of Dress for Success Dallas is hosting a reception with Don Teague and Raff Raff Barak tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Hotel Palomar in Dallas. And if you go to dressforsuccess.org, you can find out information on that, or you can find the link on the KERA Think page. When you go to KERA.org and you make your gift of support to the station,
you'll be there anyway.
Yeah, you're already there. Maybe you're listening online even. Please do your part right now, though, because it only takes you and the rest of you to make public radio a success.
It's just the formula of how public radio works. Because we don't sell advertising, we come to you directly, and we only come to you three times a year, and it may seem like we're here for a long time when we do come, but as soon as we make our financial goal, we're done. Nobody's here to get rich or to make a profit. We are just here to make sure that we have the resources to continue broadcasting the programs that you have come to depend on. So if you can make a contribution now at any level, give us a call at 1-888-694-6931.
This is the fifth media market in the country, and we're thrilled to be able to have, you know, Chris and I are listeners as well, and we're thrilled to be able to have a public radio station here of KERA's quality as listeners. And so are many of you. Over 400,000 people tune in sometime during the week to KERA, and NPR calculates our program fees based on how many of you listen. So the fact that you've joined the listenership of KERA is great. We're thrilled to have you. But it also means that our annual fees to NPR, PRI, and American Public Media, which right now are about $1 million a year, grow incrementally every time more people tune in. So we are asking you to do your part to help meet those fees, and partly because, you know, the success of the station is the reason the fees are where they are. So please be the next one to call, 888-694-6931, or contribute online safely and securely at KERA.org.
You know, Jeff, I ran into one of our board members last night, Dan Routman, and he mentioned the reason that he has stayed involved with the station is that KERA, of all the nonprofits in North Texas, KERA directly impacts more people than any other nonprofit organization in this part of the country, which is pretty amazing. If you want to do something good with your charitable dollars, this is a great place to start.
It sure is. I want to thank our guests for being really patient during these membership campaign breaks. There is more conversation coming up, but there's still time for you to call 888-694-6931 or go online to KERA.org, and thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can distinguish yourself professionally and personally. Evening classes are available in Plano and Dallas. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are CBS News correspondent Don Teague and Raff Raff Barak, who is a former translator for NBC News in Iraq. Their new book is called Saved by Her Enemy, An Iraqi Woman's Journey to the Heart of War, From the Heart of War to the Heartland of America. Join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. Don, did you feel a moral obligation to get Raff Raff out? And if so, how did that affect the fact that you couldn't take every translator with you?
Right. I did, yes. And, right, we have other people who work for NBC News at the time. And I should tell you that many of them have now come out and are in the U.S. But she's the one who had the immediate need then. The others at the time just weren't being targeted. They had different situations. But there was something about Raff Raff that I guess she was unable to hide what she was doing. So while, of course, I felt for all of the people there, she was the one who and obviously we became friends. So this is somebody I know and work with every day who needs help. So, yeah, it was definitely felt like it was a moral obligation personally. And, you know, what's interesting is that's not unique. The U.S. military, there are so many military commanders who are currently right now fighting to get their translators out, particularly before the U.S. troops pull out later this year, because many of those translators will be at risk when they lose the security that they now have of having these military units protect them. And they're quite concerned about it, to the point that the Congress has approved a special visa to bring those translators out that wasn't available when we brought Ruff out.
So you're here and you're safe, but you really, at this point, can't go home.
No, I haven't been home since like 5.5 years ago. It's not, even though like my family is saying that it's getting a little bit better, you know, it's getting safer. It's still, to me, I don't feel safe because I've been there, I've seen it, and I know what these people are capable of. So I just don't feel safe myself. So.
And the few stories we've talked about here are just a sampling of the things that happened to her there. I mean, she found herself in the middle of firefights, missed being killed by bombs by seconds numerous times. She was living a life and death struggle every day, which is so hard for people here in this country to imagine. Imagine trying to do that here in Dallas, just going about your daily business and almost dying on a daily basis. But I should say that there's a lot of fun that happens in this book too, because even in the worst of circumstances, people are human and we have a whole range of emotions. So we try to write about things that make us laugh and cry and just funny, embarrassing things that happen in the book. She won't let me talk about the embarrassing things on the radio.
You can't say anything embarrassing. That,
I'll just use one word though: dating.
No.
With her trying to figure that out once she was here and, you know, having the freedom to do so that she didn't have at home. My wife and I got a kick out of watching that process.
I want to ask you about something else. You were raised Shiite Muslim. Mm-hmm. You are dressed by American standards pretty conservatively and modestly, but you have bare arms. And your faith has changed since you've come to the U.S.
Well, yes, I realized that what I grew up to know was not what I really believe right now and what my heart desires. And when I came here, it's not just coming here or living with Don and his wife, because in no way either them or the people I was surrounded by were trying to convert me or make me leave my religion. Before, it was just me finding out on my own that there was a God that was involved in my life and has been trying all these years to pull me out and put me in a safety zone and have put people in my way to try to get me out. But I've been blinded by everything else not to see that. And I finally found it and found that way to find God and not to be scared of my family or my society or anything, but more have that faith in God that no matter what, I gained him and I still have my family. I still love them. So
was it hard to tell them though? I know you still love your family and I know that they're still practicing Muslims.
Yeah, they found out. But when they asked me, I told them, yes, it was the truth. And if they want to hear me explain why, I could explain to them, but they didn't want to hear the explanation. But at the same time, I know that they are there for me. So
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phones to Doug in Dallas. Hello, Doug.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
And hello, Ruff Ruff and Don.
Hi, how are you?
I'm enjoying this. I'm almost blind, so the physical side of people doesn't mean much to me, but your name, Ruff Ruff, is beautiful. Is there a translation into English?
Yeah, it does. It has it means the green grass bed that's flying like the wings of the birds in heaven.
Boy, that sounds even better no matter what. Yeah, it's a gorgeous name. But it's not a name. It was a name that sort of got you messed with in school.
Yes, because it was not a regular name. It was very rare. I've never, ever met someone with it. So in school, everybody called me different names. I was sitting there in classrooms waiting for someone to say, who did we not call? I'll be like, me.
The thing is, dogs bark the same in every country. So Ruff Ruff sounds like a barking dog in every country. So she's had people of all nationalities tease her about her name her entire life.
Well, if they knew what it meant, they would stop teasing.
No, exactly. It's a beautiful name.
Let's go next to Richard in Dallas. Hello, Richard.
Hello. How are you guys doing today?
Very
good,
well.
How
thank you.
Are you?
Well, I was going to tell you, Ruff Ruff, I spent 32 years in the Navy, and I spent most of my time with the Marine Corps, and we've dealt with several translators, and in fact, one of them I was telling the lady before that, I mean, they're not reiterating how dangerous it is for these translators. One of my translators, they killed his wife, his kids, his cousins, his extended family. And we were like, dude, we got to get him out now. I mean, he could stay here.
Were you able to?
Made some phone calls, and we called the Immigration Naturalization Service, and it took some persuasion on some officers' parts, but we finally did get him out. And, you know, now he's married. He's got a beautiful wife, and I talk to him probably every third day or so. But, I mean, every time I talk to him, I'm like, aren't you glad you got out? And he's like, by the hair, by the hair.
Yep.
It's very hard when you have your life hanging out by a thread and you don't know what to do. I mean, even when I left, my family still got threatened. My family got kicked out of their house. They got sent, they told them, if you don't get out, we'll burn the house on you. And they did burn a few houses in the neighborhood. So my family got relocated to a rental house at the time. And it was just one thing after another. That it just doesn't stop. Once you're on their list, there's nothing that could take you off. And that's why I don't feel too safe to go back at least and visit.
And there was no process to get her out in 2004. She was one of really about a dozen or so Iraqis that I've been able to identify through records who actually came to the U.S. that year. Mm-hmm. And it took just a lot of persistence, about a 7-month process, and a lot of money and a lot of help from many of my colleagues in the media. So, the book goes into detail about that it certainly wasn't, you know, just me working to bring her out. It was a huge effort, and ultimately, to keep her here legally, we had to get her in a university and then fund her education, which was about $70,000, which we raised in a very short amount of time by going to, you know, lots of folks in New York in this business, you know, and they were very generous.
But even network correspondents are not wealthy people by traditional standards.
No, I do not have $70,000 just sitting around. So we did a lot of begging. If you were unfortunate enough to sit next to me on an airplane in 2004, you take off the iPod and there's me saying, let me tell you a story. And when it ends, I hand you an envelope and say, if you'd like to help, you can
help
fund this fellowship. Yeah.
Ruff, what are you doing now?
Technically, I'm still a student at the University of South Florida. I just haven't graduated yet. I finished 36 hours of my graduate degree and still haven't written my thesis yet. But I still reside in Tampa, Florida, and just do my thing.
Do you know what kind of career you want to have?
I want to go back to translation. Hopefully, one day I will be back to translation. I really would love to be that bridge again.
And you've also, you know Spanish, is that right?
Very, very little, muy poquito, as they say. I can understand now more than before. It's just that I studied it. I never practiced it. So I can hold a little conversation, but I'm working on it more.
Raff Barak and Don Teague are the authors of Saved by Her Enemy, An Iraqi Woman's Journey from the Heart of War to the Heartland of America. Thank you both so much for coming in and sharing your story. It's really interestingly told in the book, so I appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to all of you who have called this hour to participate in the program or to make a contribution to KERA. There is still time to do so if you would like to keep public radio strong in your community. The number is 1-888-694-6931. You can also go online to kera.org and make your contribution there. You can do it with a debit card or a credit card. You can set up a sustaining membership. We even have it set up that you can send a good old-fashioned paper check if that's how you like to do things. Hello, Jeff Whittington.
Hello, Chris Boyd. Yes, we'll also send you the envelope, as Don was saying. What a great conversation.
Yeah.
What a fascinating story. The book, Saved by Our Enemy, it's available at the $120 membership level. That's $10 a month if you're a sustaining member, or you can use your Visa or Visa, MasterCard, American Express Discover credit card, or your debit card. There are a wide range of thank you gifts available at numerous levels. So if you go to kera.org, you can scroll through some of those and see if there's something that piques your interest. We'd love to have your call right now to 888-694-6931 or your online contribution, because we'd like to get as close as we can today to finishing this membership campaign.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go to kera.org online. The wonderful thing about public radio is its mission to serve lifelong learners, people who are just curious about the world. I think curiosity is one of the most amazing qualities that brings human beings together. And it doesn't mean that we all have to agree with one another or disagree with one another. It just means we want to understand what other people think, what their lives are like, what their experiences have been. Public radio is tailor-made for people who are just sort of inherently curious.
And Chris, we got a bunch of emails during the show that from people who we couldn't, we didn't have time to share all of them, who just really were amazed at the story and thanked the station and thanked our guests for telling the story. We're really appreciative of people who go the extra mile and bridge that cultural gap between, in this case, Iraqis and Americans. And, you know, that's what our goal kind of is every day on KERA, is to give you an insight into something that you may not have been familiar with before, or if you were slightly familiar or even very familiar with, give you another perspective or further that understanding. That's what public radio is all about. And when you join the station with a contribution of dollars at whatever level is right for you, you're helping to ensure that service is still there down the road, it stays strong, and that it's able to continue to bring you the content that you get from KERA every single day.
Public radio exists because people like you and me believe that it's important. We believe that it's a resource for the community. And we recognize that if we use the service, we have really an obligation to help to pay for it. If you are absolutely, destitute and you don't have a spare dime to your name, we get it. This year, you can take a pass. But the truth is that a lot of us are able to make a contribution. Maybe for you, it's $10 a month, or maybe you're lucky enough to be able to do $200 or $300 a month. That amount is your business, and we would never tell you exactly what the right amount is. But we do ask that everyone who listens, join the station as a supporting member. The number is 1-888-694-6931. You can also go to kera.org online.
Yeah, please do your part. 1-888-694-6931. Online at kera.org. Our goal when we started the drive, Chris, $700,000 overall for the total goal that we need to raise to keep things getting paid off, directly and at the right time, and keep the lights on and keep the equipment working and keep all the program fees current, et cetera. We were hoping to wrap things up by tomorrow. And actually, it is still possible we could wrap things up by tomorrow, but we're closing in on the $400,000 total raised area. If everyone who listens to the station today, who hasn't supported it, all the listeners who tune in today, and that maybe that means you, and because you've listened, you're listening right now, and maybe you haven't supported the station yet during the drive, and you know what, maybe you just haven't had the chance to be reminded when it was convenient, and right now maybe this is a good time for you. It's convenient for you. You're near the phone. You're near a computer. You can call 888-694-6931. You can go online to kera.org and make the contribution and do it right now. And if everyone did that today, I'm pretty confident that we would wrap things up by the end of the day tomorrow. As it stands, we have to raise this much money. So the drive is scheduled to continue until we reach our overall goal. So, we're thrilled to be able to have you as listeners, but we really would like for you to do your part today so that we can wrap this up as soon as possible.
1-888-694-6931. You will be supporting your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA, Dallas-Fort Worth, Denton, 100.1 K261 CW in Tyler, 88.3 K202 DR in Wichita Falls, 99.3 K257 EV in Sherman.
And we'd like to thank some people. I can't really read those names. We'd like to thank some people who joined
Sophia
in the last few minutes.
Sophia Ukelevich in Frisco, Heather Ellsburn in Grapevine, Sean Kelly in Plano, and Aaron Baker in Glen Heights.
We'd love to see your name come across the monitor. We'd love to see that you've done your part by supporting KERA. 1-888-694-6931. Go online to kera.org. That counts too. We see all those web pledges and all those phone pledges come across the screen here, and we're able to say thanks when you do your part.
Are you a Melissa Etheridge fan?
Melissa Etheridge,
I think she's great. She is coming to McFarland Auditorium Tuesday, August 3rd. The tickets are not yet on sale, but... and you know I'm coming to you for a reason. If you make a $250 credit card or debit card pledge right now, and we only have 8 pairs of these to go around, you can have your tickets reserved.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. And McFarland sells out fast because it's not that big.
It's not. It's like a 2,000
like 2,400 people.
Yeah. It's not very big. It's a great place to see a concert, too. I saw the Turtle Island String Quartet there once, and it was just fantastic.
So call right now, 1-888-694-6931, and make that $250 credit or debit card pledge. And if you are one of the first 8 people to take us up on this, you can have your tickets before they go on sale.
888-694-6931. You got to call to get these Melissa Etheridge tickets. It's a great deal. And not only are you getting these tickets before they're even on sale to the general public, but you're also supporting your public radio station right here in North Texas, KERA. You know, it takes everybody and everybody's participation to make it work. And it's worked this far, 36 years, because people have supported it. So won't you be the next one? Won't you do your part at 888-694-6931?
It is easy to make a contribution. It only takes a couple of minutes. You can do it with a credit or a debit card, or you can set up a sustaining membership, which just takes a small amount that you decide out of your checking account every month. Please call us now, 1-888-694-6931, or online at kera.org. Thanks.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.